Who's ready to talk about the one-page plan? I love you guys so much. So awesome. Hello, virtuals. How are you today? Somebody wave. Woo. Thank you. Is that Andrew? Good morning. Andrew was supposed to be here with Jackie, but he had to stay home. So he has to attend virtually. He's a little sad about it. So we want to make it. All right. We're going to talk about the one-page plan. So we're going to spend about 45 minutes going through it, and that's what happens with the Lego tower when you move things, right? Shaking things up. All right, let's talk about the one-page plan. So we're going to take about 45 minutes to go through this, and we're going to have 15 minutes of Q&A and really like just really engage with you guys. But if you have questions along the way, feel free to ask them. One-page plan. Adam, this is you. Get your smiling face.
It does have the smiling face. Picture. Good morning, everybody. Looks like things were successful with the Lego activity. The beautiful thing about the one page plan is that it allows us in this, again, this isn't accidental why we're talking about the artifact, if you will, of the one page plan after yesterday's Say Yes Prospect process, because this is the artifact that we create and deliver through the engagement process, through the prospecting process, which then is the foundation for all planning that happens going forward, right? The shift that has happened in our profession is it's the engagement and it's the relationship, it's the collaboration that happens with clients. It's not about the 80-page plan. It's not about all the details. I was having a conversation last night at dinner with one of the winners of the raffle, and she's in quote unquote competition with another advisor for a prospective client. And this other advisor, this client, perceives or believes, feels that the value that the current advisor provides is the fact that I always get an 85-page document and it's got all this information. But the challenge was, he doesn't really know what's in it, but he feels like there's a lot of good in that. And so the conversation from her perspective is, okay, how do we distill down through all that information and actually make a decision on who's gonna do what, when, and for what problem we're solving? And the one-page plan is that ability to deliver that succinctly and concisely to your relationships, and it starts in the prospecting process.
Yeah, it'll continue in the first meeting, right? It'll go through the conversion process, and then, right, many people will continue it on ongoing client meetings, right? I like it because it's a simple dashboard. You will find that clients come in. The reason that they get anchored to other ideas. So I had a client once up in one of our United Capital offices, and she worked with really high net worth individuals up there. And she literally had, I'm not kidding, this much paper for client meetings. And we had different advisors in the office. So then the team had to prepare different. I was like, this is just not at all remotely efficient. And I really don't think that your clients want this much paper. She's like, oh no, they need it. They're used to it. And I said, when did those prospects come in and say, by the way, I want you to be my advisor and I need like 3.6 inches and that's going to be okay? She's like, well, they didn't. I said, okay, who decided they needed all that paper? Who set that as the bar for, right, here's the deliverable? And she said, I did. I said, so do you get to adjust the bar? And she was like, freaked out. I don't know. I said, here's what we're going to do. At the end of a meeting, you're going to take this plan. You're going to say to the client, we covered a lot of information today. We've started making copies of the important pages. A lot of our clients want to take them home with them. I'm going to run and grab a coffee. You guys just let us know what pages you want. You can just do it in the room, right? Let us know what pages you want and I'll have the team make copies. I said, just do that 5 times. Don't believe me. Just do it 5 times and let the clients tell you how many pages they want. How many pages did they take? 2, 3, 2, 3, and 1. Yeah, 23, 2, 3, 1, 23, 20, that's how I remember, 23, 23, 1. Now there are the occasional clients that'll be like, oh, I want, and that's okay. But what people ultimately want to know is that stuff is happening behind the curtain. So it's okay to say, hey, you know, we've always used these big documents and plans. What we realize is that, right, our clients really want us to keep it simple. So we started using the simple one-page dashboard. It's going to cover what's important to you, what has our attention right now, and what our next steps and action items are. So that is, does that sound okay with you? People are like, yeah, that sounds great. So it's really about resetting your expectations so that you can, if you need to do that with current clients, reset some of their expectations. COVID is a great reason. So many people got to go back and say, hey, you know what? We realize we really want to keep things simple and focused on what's important and too much complexity. So we started doing this and our clients are liking it. We've done one for you. Would you like to continue? Right, with new clients, which we'll talk a lot about today, right? They work very, very effectively, because what we're really trying to do is talk about what real financial planning is. And if what you heard what Julie said yesterday and what I said yesterday and through all these conversations is, it's about sitting in partnership with the client and delivering ongoing advice. And so real planning is different than projections. We all know that those projections are, you know, moot 7 seconds after they walk out the door, right? So what we always used to say is, I used to say, look, things are always changing. There are four things that I can always guarantee are changing: you, me, the markets, and the law. That means we need to come back and have these conversations. So it's really about how we get ourselves to a place where we can use this tool in a way that's really effective for clients and really effective for us as a business.
And the reason that this works is, and you know, credit to our friend Carl Richards, right, that talks about real financial planning, and that the fact that planning is an event and it's a process. Thank you. It's a process, not an event. The reason that this works, and that it works for people that have $100,000 net worth all the way up to $70 million net worth, is previously we would hide behind the planning, for lack of a better word, because we didn't have conviction in our own process and clients didn't really know what we did. And so the plan was, see, look what I built. See, here's proof that I did everything. And we would forget the fact that we actually asked really good questions and the client felt thoroughly financially diagnosed, that they felt like we cared, that we sat there and we understood what was most important to them, right? Another one of my favorite Carlisms is, people don't care about our solutions, they care about their problems. And if you spend time thoroughly understanding what their problem is and why they're in your office and why you're having these conversations with them, and that they know that you know what is most important to them, it doesn't have to be 80 pages. It doesn't have to be 10 pages. I deliver our one-page plan on the dry erase board on Zoom calls. My artifact, if you will, the deliverable to Steph's story, I will have clients say, can you take a picture of that and send that to me? I bet we have 75% of our client files that the deliverable, now, yes, for the record, for the recording, for compliance,
we are doing work.
We have the e-money report. We print that. It's in the file. But what clients ask is, when I do the schematic of how we're going to be taking cash distributions out of an S corporation and what dollar amount is going to go into the tax escrow fund and what's going to go into the brokerage and what's going to go, I mean, I'm basically drawing an asset map or an income flow. What's that? There's a graph of, that shows the dispersion of dollars. I sketch that out. John will sketch that out when he's doing his meetings on a dry erase board, and their entire financial plan is on a frosted glass dry erase board.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the meeting, I said, does this make sense? Yeah. Can you take a picture of that and send that to me? Sure. Take a picture, snap it. Kathy emails it as part of the follow-up. All they care about is the action, that they have clear and confident decisions on what the next best step is. And it doesn't have to be buried inside of an 80-page plan.
Yeah. And the goal is to really stop playing to lose. And what we mean by that is, you can't compete with Merrill Lynch or those big, you know, that like the huge teams, and a 50-page plan is just a 50-page plan. Like, the robots can crush you on the ability to put data in, click a button, and get data out. That's not a game you're gonna win. What is a game you can win every single time? Understanding that your value is not those pages, right? It's sitting in partnership, co-creating, right? Lifelong, we always talk about being a lifelong problem-solving partner, right? Co-creating plans with clients, not for clients. And that's what the one-page plan, whether it's one page, two pages, three pages, or a visual, the concept there is a simple dashboard that clients can orient to and just know everything I need to pay attention to is going to be on that page.
Well, and remember what Julie put up yesterday at the beginning of her talk, the Fidelity report that just came out, right? The next generation of clients, regardless, and when I say next generation, yes, it's starting with our quote-unquote baby boomer clients right now, and it's progressively getting more defined as that age gets younger, is it's not in the retirement and income planning and linear projections of what software assumptions are going to put out. Because what do we know about assumptions? They're wrong next week. They're wrong tomorrow,
yeah.
Right? It's a lie, but it looks pretty. And it gives us something to, dare I say, hide behind. But
well, they want to collaborate. It's a proving strategy,
yeah.
Right? Like, look at how smart I am. But what we really want to question is your value a software program?
Correct.
Like, that's not a game you're going to win because everybody's got the software, right? It's what we do with that information, how we connect what's there that's relevant to a client to the conversation. And that's what a simple plan forces you to do. It is a forcing mechanism to focus the conversation on the things that really matter. All we're suggesting is we bring a little bit of organization and order to that, so that we're really surfacing the things we want clients to consistently focus on, what's important to them, right?
And it may sound like I'm beating up on financial planning software, right? We still use eMoney for the technical work, for the deep dive, for the deliverable to determine, hey, what is the impact of this estate planning strategy going to be on their total taxable estate? Like, I'm not discounting that and saying that, oh, just, you don't need any financial planning software. Just open up a Word document and do it on a yellow pad. Now, you technically could do that. There are very, very successful advisors that deliver their financial plans on a yellow pad in conversation. So you do you as far as what you need to feel technically competent. My point that I'm making and that we're saying, sitting up here saying, is that don't believe that it stops there and that the plan is the value. The plan is the foundation, and it can be the agenda, if you will, for an engaged conversation. And that's why clients are working with you.
Yeah. And I think that really, this is really the point. Oh, here, I want to go back one. Where did we go? Where did it go?
You got to really push the back button. There we go.
Hard. So one thing I want you to really think about here is when you think about the process of the one-page plan, the concept is not to deliver an actual plan in the prospect phase of the process. The job is to work with the client to clarify what's important to them, to surface the issues that you're gonna wanna pay attention to. You're not gonna go run the insurance analysis, you're gonna say, we need to look at life insurance to make sure that Jane can sleep without worrying that Bob, like whatever their words were. And they're gonna go, yeah, based on the conversation we had, Lyle, we are gonna need to do that. You're getting paid to diagnose, not to treat at that phase in the process. And that is more than enough to demonstrate the value you're going to offer, because it's all based on the conversation, which is where all the value is in terms of like, do they see me? Do they hear me? Do they understand me? If you can get that on one piece or two pieces of paper, they are going to think to themselves, of course she can help me do it. That's like a non-issue at that point, right? So it's all about building value up to that point. And if you can put that on a piece of paper and say, hey, you said this was important. We talked about how in order to achieve those goals in a way that makes you feel really comfortable in retirement, we're going to really want to looking at your insurance. We're going to want to look at the second home and the cost of carrying that versus maybe renting. We're going to want to look, right, a couple of bullet points. And our next steps are, right, we're going to have our next meeting. We're going to sit down and design the plan. Like,
and
does that work for you?
And this is where you go into the library and pull samples of the one-page plans that we have in there, right? The balance here is to give enough information to demonstrate that A, you're competent, B, that you've identified some actual planning options, strategies, concepts that are going to benefit them, but you're not necessarily covering everything, right? This isn't a full financial plan. We will say something to the effect of, the goal for this process, Mr. Prospect, is to identify what we consider to be low-hanging fruit opportunities. What I can promise you, though, that in our experience is that solving those low-hanging fruit opportunities inevitably opens up doors to additional planning opportunities that we will get through the planning process. But we want to give you enough information early on in the process to show you what we can do and the value that we can add in your life. It's not the full Monty. You're not giving everything away here, but we have to start somewhere. We have to gather some information.
What you're actually doing is really powerful at a brain behavioral level, is you're creating a common story. You guys hear me say common language all the time. Comp plans and career ladders are common language, so that you and the person on the other side of them both see, right? I'm not speaking Greek and you're speaking Chinese. That's why we use their words. So what you're doing in this process is you're soliciting from them the things that you need to complete that one-page plan, and you're identifying problems along the way. And to Adam's point, you're not solving them. You're saying, hey, when we get to this, we're going to want to look at, like, there are typically three options when we look at your RSUs. It's A, B, or C, but you're right, we're going to want to run the and all the smart stuff. We're going to want to do this. And so our job is to, right, well, when we get there, we're going to worry about that. But right now, we want to know that this is the goal here. So you concede that you're going to do these things. We're going to need to look at options. You can let them know, like, I know what I'm talking about. I already know that you have three options. So that's where you're seeding, like, I know what I'm doing, I'm soliciting the issues, and the brain is just hardwired. If someone says something that I relate to, the brain is like, he gets it. And that's what you're trying to create in these moments. You're trying to create, I see you, I hear you, I understand you. Because the next logical step in there is, I can count on you to help me fix it.
And you're bridging the gap between, or not bridging the gap, but you're using, you saw on the screen there, the information that you're asking in the pre, or in the, as you're setting the appointment and you're understanding, why are they knocking on your proverbial door? Like, why are they here? What's the problem that they're looking to have solved? If you do a good job asking for that information, they will tell you what you need to put on that one page plan. I need to sell my practice for max valuation. Great. So now what am I going to do? What filter am I going to put all the information that I get, the five items that we ask for in our triage process, right? 2 years tax returns, business, personal, profit, the big three financial statements, and then investment statements. All of that information that I'm that we gather when we go to create the financial plan is going to be put through the filter of what strategies, based off of this information that we've gathered here, what strategies could we consider for them to help solve what their chief complaint is? Why did they come to the doctor? Parentheses, financial, right? Why did they come to the financial doctor? Well, I have this problem. Okay, so how can I create something that very clearly and concisely, I say those words a lot because it's the foundation of what we're talking about here. How do I take the information that they've, their financial life already up into this point, and analyze it through the filter of what is top of mind for them, and then write it in a way that is easy for them to understand in a language that they can understand. So for the first time, most people are like, oh, I get it.
I know what this financial planning thing is.
It's like, I don't want to distill it down too much, but it's kind of like a to-do list with a little bit of advice sprinkled in.
The data that you need to do the analysis and all the right, the technical work is in the documents. What you're trying to do is get the story about their life and their money and what's happening and what they want and what's showing up for them. And then you want to very tactfully create opportunities around surfacing problems. Hey, how are you guys looking at reducing your tax bill? Hey, what is your strategy for Social Security? I don't have one. Like, okay, what in that moment, I'm drawing a line in the brain. What's your strategy for Social Security?
Well, this is
what happens instantly.
This is what Michelle and I were talking about last night.
I'm supposed to have one. I clearly don't have one. This guy obviously knows about it. I think I need him.
Right.
Like that happens in a fifth of a second.
You're using the Socratic method of advice, right? Socrates and Plato in his dialogues taught by asking questions. And you're not giving advice. You're simply seeding questions to invoke confidence. And dare I say, question the strategy that they have already. Mr. Prospect, based off of my analysis right now, with the amount of money that you've saved and what you plan on spending in retirement over a normal retirement, it looks like you're gonna have about a $600,000 lifetime tax bill in retirement. Can you help me understand what your current strategy is to mitigate that tax bill to pay as little in taxes as possible over your retirement lifetime? Right? That's usually what you hear.
You're surfacing in a very diplomatic way, in a way that lets them maintain their dignity. You're not like, wow, why haven't you done this? Notice they're all how, what have you, right? So you're asking in a way that says, and it just creates a gap. Or some people will have, right, their own investment models. Great. Then the question is, how did you pick your investment model?
One of my favorite questions is, can you help me understand your investment philosophy?
And they will often say,
what's that?
What's that? And then Adam gets to say, well, we have an investment philosophy and it's this, right? So you're creating this common language all the way through, right? So that everybody start, and it's all just getting absorbed into this one or again, these simple plans so that you can show them that you get it. That's literally, and then you're gonna seed messages right after. Yeah, a lot of people that manage their own money don't have a lot of time to really nail down, right, the latest investment strategies. That's our work here, right? A part of our value is to make sure we're maximizing your portfolio. We're looking at this seed, you know, we're going to look at withdrawal sequencing and tax loss harvesting. You know, don't go too deep again, but you're like, oh, look at all the smart stuff that we can do that you don't even know about. So you've surfaced a need. They are pretty clear that there is a gap. And now the decision is, are they going to hire you to fill it?
Keep in mind here as well, as, and I know we're getting tactical here a little bit in our conversation, but don't don't discount or turn a blind eye, to what the current environment is telling you. So last year, back to that investment philosophy conversation, it was something along the lines of, can you help me understand in volatile markets like this? In volatile markets like we're in right now, can you help me understand how you're maximizing your tax loss harvesting opportunities? Understanding that we can't control when the markets go up or down or sideways, but there are opportunities to mitigate mitigate our tax bill through tax loss harvesting. Can you help me understand your strategy for maximizing those opportunities?
And you could go really straightforward with that and just be like, there's been a lot of volatility in the market last year. What have you been doing over the last 12 months? Like, what have you been doing to manage your tax losses?
And that's the left side of the brain. The right side of the brain question to that is, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the markets lately? Because for all you know, maybe the advisor has been very tactical. And at the end of the day, maybe that client just wants to know, hey, somebody cares about how I'm feeling. Like, you can flank that conversation. You can address both sides of that.
So. Yeah, if he was like, hey, I don't know. And then you could be like, well, how does that feel to you? Like, is that comfortable? And that person would be like, no, that's not really comfortable. I want one. And like, I just happen to have one right here in my back pocket that I can give you. So do you notice how nothing's radically different, except we're not pushing all the pages across the paper. When we push all those pages across the paper, where does everybody's eyeballs go? And where does the conversation go? Into the paper. Right, into the pile, as we like. We don't want to go diving into the pile. We want to surface things from the conversation that the pile will help us solve. That's where the data is for, just to solve the problems that we surface and the opportunities. I like to, right, we are problem-solving partners, but I also think we're possibility creators, and I always want to make sure we tag that part on. So it's, you know, Carl talks so much about this. I lost my deep click. Deep click. I got a super strong thumb. I'm going to have cramps later today. Your use of capital, right? We talked about this with Legos this morning, right? We have so many resources. We have things that matter to us. Has anyone read the book by Mark Manson, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a...
It's a good book.
F-bomb. It's a great book. They did a documentary, so I watched it with 15, which was really cool. He really enjoyed it because he got to like listen to the F-bomb 97 times with permission. Right now you're all really judging my parenting, I know. It's okay. But this whole, like, he's talking about this, and he says it's not about not giving a, that people miss it. He said it's about realizing that you don't have the time, energy, or attention to give about everything. So you got to get really clear what you give a F about. And I was like, so good. Like, your clients have a lot. They're coming with complexity. They're coming with all of this stuff. And you know what we tend to do if we're not really careful? Prove to them how smart we are with more complexity. When the number one thing that people want from you is what? Beyond the answers to the big questions. What is the thing that's on every list of every research that's ever been done? I want someone to help me simplify and organize my financial life. Please simplify and help them organize. And we can just start. If you have those 50 pages and you're attached to them, just put the one page plan on top.
Here's a quick metaphorical story about how we talk about the one-page plan with prospects. We'll say, Mr. Prospect, given your situation, is it fair to assume that you spent a lifetime accumulating a bunch of pieces of your financial puzzle? And you've been carrying them around in a hefty sack. And you're trying to put them together. And the goal of a financial plan is to put the puzzle together the right way the first time. But what's the most important thing that we need when we're trying to build a puzzle? The box.
You need the picture.
What am I building? And so this planning process that we engage in first helps us create the box. And once we know what we're building, now we can do the next step. And what do we do when we put together a puzzle? We find the corner pieces. Those are typically your investments, your estate planning, your insurance, and then we work on the borders, and that's your cash flow. And then we start on the inside, and we start seeing this thing come to life. But we're putting it together the right way the first time, and the best way that we know how to do that is if we start with the box. Most people are carrying around this hefty sack of financial pieces of the financial puzzle. They're carrying around this hefty sack, pieces of their financial puzzle, trying to put it together, but they have no idea what they're trying to create. That's what our planning process does. Resonates well.
Right.
Feel free to rip off and deploy, right?
Yeah. And that's the goal. Right. And then they say, oh, and then say the way that we begin that process is we like to start with a simple one-page plan, right? Or a simple plan that helps us clarify what's really important to you. We want to really work through the, you know, this time together to identify and surface the issues that are most pressing to your planning and your personal situation right now. And then in our next meeting, we'll get, right, you're laying the whole thing out. In our next meeting, we'll get back together. We'll present that plan to you, which should reflect what's really important to you, the things that really need your attention from a planning and a personal perspective, and a clear set of next steps so that we all know how to stay, how to move forward and how to stay on track. But does that sound like something that would be valuable to you?
People love stories.
No one has ever said in the history of my knowledge, I'm not saying it couldn't have happened, but I think I would have gotten the phone call. No one has ever said, no, give me more paper. Just bore me with stuff.
Maybe engineers.
Well, but with the engineers and the doctors, you already have the paper on the table. And you're like, hey, all the stuff is in here, but we want to keep it simple. And the reason that you put that on top is it focuses them on that. And then what you're going to notice is once in a while, you might be like, oh, let's crack this open and look at page 17. But what's going to happen over a period of time is they're going to realize I'm not actually in the paper. I'm on the top. And they come to rely on whatever dashboard you use. We want to design it intentionally so that it has those things. You can add a pie chart with this or that if you really feel like you need to. You also literally do not need to. Now, like Tiff and Jared, we're rebuilding all their branding and everything. So we're going back through and they'll have like a 2-3 page plan. Their clients are entrepreneurs, right? There's some data we want to report on a regular basis. It's going to be super visual. Right. So we got the first version and it's 3 pages. And I was like, we need to cut half of what's here off the page. I was like, we've gone from 1 to 2, from 2 to 3. And now we're cramming as much as now. So, but now we've got the core. Now we can go through and systematically get really clear. And this is what I challenge them to do. Tell me the story behind every piece of data on this page. Tell me how you're going to use it in the meeting. Hey, when you look at this pie chart, what are you going to say? I was like, otherwise, it is not a reason to be on the page. If it's part of the story of what you're going to consistently cover, absolutely, we can totally have 3 or 4 pages. They've got to have a lot more white space. I'd rather have 4 pages with white space than 2 pages that are overwhelming. So again, the goal is simple and clear. Remember the model for change we talked about in the very beginning of Limitless? How do you manage and maintain change over time? Every time, clarity, transparency and accountability. And I was talking with Carl one day and I was like, oh, do you know why the one-page plan works? Clarity, transparency. Here are the things we need to be working on, right? Here are the next steps. Like everybody's clear on the plan and accountability. We come back to that plan. Hey, did we do what we needed to do? Did you know what need? Is the plan working? Do we need to hold the plan accountable with changes? So it becomes a very simple but powerful lever to govern the relationship, because it becomes the thing that everybody looks to and says, are we okay? What's on the page? And then you're going to bring in, I promise, there's lots of analysis and technical work and calculations. You're still going to do that. We are not advocating that you stop planning. We're advocating that you don't lead with the math. Does that make sense? What is the one page? I skipped ahead.
I know.
So we get so excited when we talk about this stuff, right? So get to the heart of the matter. So it literally is things like what's really important to you, time we love, you know, with our church. Literally, right? Time you love with the church, right? Setting and priorities and goals. Again, save for a house, fully fund the kids' college. So we're not getting technical here. No jargon, 000 jargon. Right? Section 3 is going to be next steps. What are the things? Hey, we're going to get all the assets moved to the right place and invested on purpose. I bet you never thought you'd put that kind of statement in someone's plan. I'm just going to move some assets and invest on purpose. But do you see how relatable that is? Like, yeah, I want to do that investing on purpose thing you talked about. Save $1,000 a month to buy a house. Like their brain is like, do I want those things? Yes, I do. Step 4 is then to tell them what it's going to cost.
One quick tactical tip. On section 4 there, what we learned is to include the cost in the one-page plan, but all of our clients all over the country, so we're presenting this virtually over Zoom, we put the cost on a separate page because we joke with clients it is a one-ish page financial plan. Most of our OD plans are, you know, it bleeds onto a second page. And we want to have a very focused conversation around the cost. Yep. And if we had the cost like at the bottom as we're going through the one page plan,
you just can't.
They're reading ahead, they see that, and you get disconnected from the conversation. So we have 1-2 pages, right? That second page. And then there is a lot of white space at the bottom because the second page talks about our fee model, engagement process, next step, so that we can control the narrative of when we engage in that part of the conversation.
Can you talk about your first time?
Well, there I was. No. The funny thing about the first time versus last week, it really hasn't changed that much. It doesn't, and I mentioned this yesterday. I know there are programs out there. I know there are software kits, if you will, that you can purchase, templates, et cetera. You don't have to beautify it that much. We still do ours on a Word document with letterhead and bullet points, and that's it. It's broken up into different sections. We can kind of make it out there, right? The first step that we're talking about is restating their goals and intentions. Back to what I said earlier, communicating to them that I see you, I hear you, yes, we can help you. And this is how we're putting everything else on the page. This is the filter and the lens that we're putting everything on the page through. You told us that why you're here is I want to sell my practice for max value. I'm not sure that the sale is going to provide enough liquidity for my retirement. I feel like I'm taking too much risk in my portfolio and fill in the blank. I want to buy a house in Florida, like whatever they're telling you. Put that on the paper and then articulate that, reaffirm that with them when you're doing the plan presentation. And then you just use that as the script for your conversation, for your plan presentation, but it doesn't have to change that much.
And you're going to notice, like, you can write graphic. I'm a big fan of branding, right? So like Tanya's.
She probably doesn't like this as much as.
No, like they just work. So
you, Tanya's is more on the right there.
Well, the Tanya's a little brand fanatic like yes, me. So yes, we kind of brand yes, everything. But you'll be updating yours soon anyway.
So we are updating a little bit. So it'll be a little bit more.
Polished.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And it doesn't have to be genuinely, truly. One of our advisors, John, you remember, $80 million client. He's like, can I just introduce it? And I'm like, yeah, we just had that conversation. Like, how are you going? $80 million client was like, this is so great. So simple. Like, I just have to look at this one thing. And he's like, yeah. He's like, this is great. Thank you. So you're allowed to improve and upgrade, by the way. It's okay to sit down with a current client and say, hey, you know, we've noticed lately things are getting really complicated. We just came up with this way to keep it really simple. Here's what we did. Let's talk through it. And then you just start talking through it like it's no big deal. And you just pick up and go. And they're like, okay, this is great. Again, I'm not saying that one person in a million might not be like, ooh, I want all the pages. And that's okay. You can be like, hey, those pages are right here. This is what we're going to use as an agenda for our meeting. Like, it's going to make sure we're focused on the things that are important and that we're identifying the issues we need to be working on. And that you're always really clear on that. There's never any question in your mind. Who doesn't want that? This is one of those like lines where you're like, hey, we want to make sure it's all here and clear and simple so that you always know what's happening and you know we're on track. Oh my God, I could do that in a page. Thank you. I'll take five. So once you get through the first time, right, you're gathering information. We love these questions. One of our favorites is, what has your attention today? That's going to show up on your issues page, the section. There's no way around it. Hey, I'm here because, and most people don't show up and say, I want to capture joy today. They say, I'm retiring, I'm on my own, I need to, right? And capture joy becomes part of your qualitative. They're like, yeah, you are a fit for me. And so they have reasons they're actually coming to you. So we never want you to believe that all the warm and the fuzzy and the advice and the love and the value is at the exclusion of solving actual tactical problems. So generally when people come to you for the first time, they have some issues that have surfaced, and that's what the one-page plan is really good at, is saying, hey, we're gonna identify, as Adam so beautifully articulated, the stuff that's on your radar right now, and we've got a process to cover all the other stuff that we know that's coming, even though we don't know when or what. Like, that's a pretty compelling value add if you're someone sitting in the prospect seat going, yes, I would like some of that. What are your biggest financial goals and concern? How successful? So we've talked about some of these questions. Get intentional with your questions, right? If you only had 3 to 5 questions to ask someone and to know in or out, what would those questions be, right? What are the things you need to solicit from that conversation to build a good one-page plan for them?
Yeah, the R factor question from Dan Sullivan is always a great one to ask. What needs to happen in this relationship 12 to 18 months from now for this to be a good fit? It's paraphrasing. I don't even know exactly how to, but they'll tell you what they're looking for out of this relationship. In a professional service relationship like that, where we're essentially selling ourselves and the relationship and the value of the advice that we're going to deliver, asking questions and trying to set expectations with them about what this process is going to mean, right? There's There's a, one of my favorite phrases, there is a seamless transition when communication ends and resentment begins. And a second or a cousin to that is misalignment of expectations. So when you ask a prospective client about what they're expecting out of this relationship, they will tell you what they're looking for. Back to those questions that we were asking previously. And then it's also your opportunity to present to them or to share the, share with them how you're different than pretty much every other advisor out there. And you can decide how in-depth you want to go. If you do want to defend, if you, or not really defend, but if you do want to articulate truly how your process is different, that, you know, some advisors might create these 80-page documents and you might have had those delivered to you in the past. We do things a little bit differently here because what we have found is that people don't really care about the data behind the plan. They just care that they have actions that are going to be in alignment with accomplishing their own financial goals. And our process is simplified down to the point to help you get the answers to the questions that you most care about in a way that's easy for you to understand. Is that in alignment with what you'd be looking for out of this relationship?
No, please overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
Right. So notice how we're setting expectations. Hey, this is how we're going to present the plan. We're setting expectations about the relationship. So there's so many opportunities to do that seeding throughout the relationship. Hey, we're going to use this one-page plan. We're going to do all the technical complicated work behind the scenes. It's here anytime you want it. But when we get together each year, we're going to come back to this simple conversation because we want to focus on the things that are important to you and that really need our attention right now. Okay. I would like some of that, please. So that's where you're really setting it up. And here are some good examples of how you turn that conversation into things that actually show up on the list.
Yeah, and you'll notice that a lot of the things on the bullet points here, yes, there are some action items, right? Capital gain, I mean, there are a lot of questions, right? Back to that Socratic method of dispensing advice. By asking them questions about their current plan, you can then sprinkle in what your recommendations would be, but you're drawing out the gaps in their plan already and showing, and by doing that, you're showing what you know and what you're, what you can do that either they or their current and or their current advisor didn't either do, or here's the real weird part about it, or not weird part about it, but like the advisor probably did some of this stuff, but they didn't communicate it effectively. And so that other advisor might have a phenomenal Social Security optimization strategy.
Client doesn't know. So that's where that seeding comes in. Hey, as we start to execute on your plan, we've got a couple of strategies that are really optimizing Social Security. We're going to want to talk through those options with you, really decide on which one best fits your situation, and then we're going to want to really act on that pretty quickly because we're going to want to bring that tax rate down.
Yeah.
Okay. So notice how we're just surfacing questions that identify the problem. Asking questions that surface the issues, then we seed options, strategies. We're going to want to work on this, but we're not doing it. We're not saying, great, come back in 2 weeks and I'm going to give you all of the answers for free and then you can decide if I'm worth it. The process, if you want the kind of relationships, that trusted advisor relationship, these processes that we're teaching you and modeling are what those little shifts and the conversation starts to create that relationship from the get-go. And the people that want that are gonna value it immensely, not the 50 pages. And the person that wants the 50 pages, if that's not your jam, you're gonna get really clear that that person is, or they're gonna get really clear that you're not the right advisor for them. And that's totally okay.
This is another opportunity when you're presenting and you're asking questions like this through the, or when you're presenting the plan through questions like this, it's also, again, this is more of a tactical tip that we've found success and that kind of resonates with people, is when you relate your strategies to existing relationships that you've already helped.
Yep.
John, you know, it's interesting. I was looking at your plan and we had a client in California. We had a relationship in California that had the same type of similar strategy. And what we found is that if we executed X, Y, and Z, that solved a very similar problem that you had. Oh, so you've worked with people like me.
Yes. Seeding.
Don't BS, right? We're not saying a lie.
No fibbing.
Don't make things up, but you'll find, and again, this goes back to, if you work with the same type of individuals, if you have your ideal client avatar, you can't help but accumulate similar examples that you can then relate to new relationships going forward.
Yeah. Things like a lot of people, when they first come to us, have these kinds of questions and concerns. They aren't sure about this. They're not sure. So we insert issue. Right. And so we've got a number of ways that we can ultimately deal with that. As we learn a little bit more, we'll be able to give you some more specific guidance around like which options, what levers are we going to really want to pull to do, right, to make the math work the best for you. Okay, great. That's why the goals are so important, because you're always coming back to them. right? You're always coming back to the value is, hey, when you quote your fee, right? Our fee to, right, help you create a plan that, right? Make sure you never run out of money. Don't do this. You leave the IRS a tip, right? We're anchoring it to the value, the things you want to achieve in exchange for the money. Because in that moment, when someone is making a decision about whether or not to work with you, in this case, they're going to be looking at that plan and saying, do I want that? And then the next thing that's going to happen, which will have been happening every step of the way to Adam's point around fees, is their brain is going to reconcile the probability of success. That's the relationship. If I believe that that I want it, what is the probability that you can do it? And my relationship with money will then determine the value. My brain will do a little math that says yes or no. That's all happening. And the more we bring them through the process so that we've basically been that guide and counselor and we've done it, now we're like, do you want to hit the go button? They're like, all that trust equity is built up, the comfort's there, they know what they're doing, they know, right, they're just going to say yes if they're a right fit client. If they're not, they're going to say no, and that's a win too.
Yeah. Through this process, you have given them all the information that they need to make an educated decision as to whether the value that they're going to receive is in alignment with the check that they'll have to write.
Yeah.
There is no hidden agenda. There's no unknown here. And if there is something, if anybody says, oh, I have to think about it. Okay, can you help me understand what you have to think about? I mean, I'm not saying, what do you have to think about, right? Ask them questions around, because you have the framework, you have the guidance, you have the common ground of this plan that you created based off of what they told you. So it's the most transparent way to understand what is in the way of them making a decision.
And what's the litmus test? When you look at the one-page plan, you should be able to answer the question, if they follow this advice, will they achieve their goals?
Yep.
Right, there's actual work behind it. Hey, are the recommendations as clear as possible? Like, can they look at this and know instantaneously what we were talking about and why? And the whole concept is designed to demonstrate your value throughout the process. The value is no longer the poundage of paper. The value is the process. And that is the value of what you do. So we're now exhibiting it in real life, the way it's going to happen, versus having a sales process and a service model. It is going to feel exactly the same if you do it right. It's going to be seamless, flowing from one to the other.
So, and we've yep. talked about this. Let's make sure that we open up time for questions. Virtual people, obviously, as well. Virtual people that are with us virtually.
Yeah.
Because I love Julie.
Like, you're real people.
Julie's presentation, I just got to say, on the record here, she is
awesome.
She's a hoot.
She's amazing.
Well, they're not virtual people. They're just people that are with us virtually. Like, that's a very, very astute observation, Julie.
She's very, I mean, like, you all know this, but she's incredibly intelligent and wise and funny, and I just love her. Yeah, it's really awesome to be, like, in your career so long that you can literally, like, be like, oh, I'm just going to, I loved that speech. I'm going to call Julie and ask her to come give it. Like, that's the fun part.
People that are with us virtually, questions.
I would be remiss if I didn't remind you, as the giant glaring screen shows, three of today's sessions, this one included, qualify for CE. And our team is really awesome. So they came up with this cool scan for credit thing so that you just scan and we handle everything else. Four lessons. All right.
Oh, okay.
Yes. But if you don't scan, you won't get credit. So please, you have my permission to take out your phone and scan the barcode.
Can I scan as a presenter? Can I get credit for
I
my
think,
own?
Well, I don't, I'm not going to tell her. Are there any compliance people in the room? I was here.
Well, yeah, I've given this presentation, I don't know how many times.
You should scan it like 60
times.
Yeah,
right. All right, questions.
Adam, I'm looking at your one-page financial plan, and it looks like does it almost replace your meeting agenda? It almost looks like the agenda.
It is. It's the framework and it's that kind of, it's a combination of an agenda and recommendations or action items.
Because some people, it almost seems like they use their financial plan with like snippets of pages from eMoney, or they might show like, you know, here's the bottom of your cash flow chart and you're in great shape.
We don't do any of that.
Like stuff like that. But it looks like yours is more of an agenda.
Nothing. So into the weeds a little bit here. We do not do anything in eMoney, in Holista Plan, no planning software is used in the creation of our one-page financial plan.
Gotcha. And second part, do you differ it with prospects versus existing clients?
So when we onboard a client, so we'll use the one-page plan as essentially that artifact that guides the conversation through the prospect process. Once they come on board as a client, part of our goal, our first goal meeting, Get Organized and Learn, is transitioning essentially the one-page plan into eMoney. So the action items and the roadmap of what we're going to be working through, back to the low-hanging fruit conversation that we have, those go into e-money as tasks. And we don't put due dates next to them because we don't know when we're going to get to them, right? I think we can all agree that financial planning is nothing more than the organization and prioritization of cash flow. Mm-hmm. And so we'll put all of the items that we're going to be talking about in e-money. And then as we get organized and learn through the onboarding process, the client will dictate the priority in which we're going to execute on those action items.
Got it. And then you get back to your next review meeting with the client.
Correct.
And you're updating that one.
So it's a living, breathing document. Yeah. I know some advisors will have like, they'll create a copy of the document. And we've had advisors that will have like 13 one-page plans in their review meeting with their clients. And it's kind of that.
The history.
What have we done in the course of our relationship? Theirs is a physical document in like the revisions of all the plans. Ours is more of a virtual document online. And then when we complete a task, any e-money users here, when you click that task and complete it, line goes through it. So there is admittedly in my own mind, a little bit of that reaffirming if we ever get the, hey, show me, what have you done for me lately? Oh, let's go take a look over here. And then you've got everything that you've worked on collectively, what we've done and what they've done because we're in their life.
Cool.
The cool thing about it is, I think whether it's in the tech or on a piece of paper, is it is intended to be a living document.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a date stamp. It's iterative. This goes to the process. So one of our lifestyle members who's now a leader took the one page plan, has it generated from the CRMs, clients or retirees. This is so cool. And it goes out to them every month, the one page. And because it's generated by the CRM, the action items fall off and update. Literally, like if I completed it, it doesn't show up on the list anymore. So like every month I'm just getting this little, like, we're on top of it. Everything's okay. Here are the things you should be working on. Here are the things we're working on. And it's all generated by the CRM, which is really cool.
Question.
Stephanie, you had said something about with existing clients and new clients. So I'm in that bucket that has the models all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of things you've said is, if I'm okay with them not having a plan, then if they're okay with me not having a plan, yep, then why should I? And so we're finding ourselves as we're looking at our book, like we keep going after these people because we're, you know, trying to provide value. It's not just investment management and we're here for you all the time, that type of deal. So could you kind of maybe expand on that a little bit? Like how, would this be a good use of that to go back and like, hey, this is it. This is where we see where you're at, the things that you need. If you
are
you
trying to transition people like from an investment, right, to get into
the
planning model? Yeah. So I call it options, right? Which is clients have a history with you based on what you told them at the time. So it's not their fault that they're in this situation, right? But what we've learned is, are we allowed to grow and learn? Of course we are. What did we promise them? That we would always stay on top of things and be our best and bring the best of what we've got. And sometimes that means we go simpler instead of more complicated. So it's really okay to sit down with clients who were in bucket A, right? So you're going to go through the profitability analysis tool. You're going to go through the service model, define those. And then you're going to have basically what I call an upstay or out conversation. And that's where you plan it, you script it out, and you're sitting down with them and you're like, this is where you're going to kind of pitch this idea of a one-page plan. Hey, we've been working together for the last 6 or 7 years, and we've really enjoyed the relationship, and it's been very focused on investments. And over the last 5 years, we've just become so much more focused on comprehensive planning. We really genuinely believe it's the greatest value that we can add to our clients. And we just wanted to let you know kind of about some of the changes that we're making and some options that are now available to you, right? And there's a service summary that's like a one page, and you can like literally list the options, like investment only clients want this, planning clients want this, right? Comprehensive wealth management clients want this. And it's very goals based. And then you just explain that they now have options. Hey, we can maintain our current investment. Now, if this is an up or out conversation, we're like, hey, we're making a switch and you got to come on board or we're going to be transitioning you, then you just alter the conversation. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're making some changes that we think are going to bring even more value to our clients. We're creating this planning offering that we're making available to clients like you. And then you're going to explain it. We really feel that it's going to help you. Boom, boom, boom. Here's what it looks like. Is that something that you'd be interested in learning more about? And you can use that one-page plan. With planning, we know people sometimes feel overwhelmed. Our job is to create a simple, clear one-page plan that helps us keep, hey, this is what something like that would look like.
It's a derivative of the prospect process, right?
Yeah.
Because essentially that's what I'm going, I'm kind of backfilling up to this point, and what's yep. new is new, so they don't know any different.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah. Yeah. And in this case, to Adam's point, like that you can use that plan as an example of, hey, right, we like to keep our planning simple. Here's the value that we're going to add. We're going to have something like this. It's always going to clarify what's important to you, what issues really need your attention, not just from an investment, but a planning perspective, right? There's a lot we can talk about there. And what are those clear next steps? So you're just really kind of doing the prospect process with a current client. You're just giving them a different option. The option is, would you like to talk more about this offering? Or are you good where you are? Or depending on your scenario, do we need to have a conversation about you?
Just resetting expectations.
Yep.
Catherine.
Exactly.
Virtual question.
Okay, we've got two virtual questions real quick. First one is from Melissa Marshall. For the one-page plan, how deeply do you review their investment statements?
Great question.
We will talk about the asset location conversation, right? So if we see an investment portfolio that's sitting, if they've got taxable, tax deferred and Roth accounts and they're holding a lot of bond positions in their taxable account, we'll talk about the benefits of asset location, you're paying and correlate that to what they're showing on their tax return. It's basically that conversation, maybe just a one more layer deep, but we're not, and by the way, we're not presenting our full portfolio of, if you moved your money to us, this is what the breakdown would look like. Here's the funds that we're using. It's the concept and the philosophy that we would, you know, we believe in tax location, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Next one is from Dana Jacobs. Nice techie question for you, Adam. How does eMoney task completion automatically update the one-page plan? What tech tools are you using? I thought Zapier didn't integrate well with eMoney.
You are correct. It does not. So it is a manual process. So part of the report that eMoney spits out, and unfortunately, yeah, in a perfect world, Zapier would do this. So when the client goes in, we set the expectation to collaborate with them. We branded eMoney as Wealth Plan in our firm. So we tell clients, you're going to get access to this tool called Wealth Plan. And in it is going to be one of the benefits of this. It provides an action item. It provides a to-do list. So through the spirit of accountability and progress, we are both, over the course of our relationship, going to see what the other party is working on to make sure that we're always progressing towards your financial goals. So they will go in there and complete the tasks. Now, truth be told, 8 out of every 10 clients don't go in there and complete them. But when we do come to our review meetings and we have those conversations, we will go in there and update that for them. We're always obviously completing the things that we're working on. So if we execute something, we are going into eMoney and doing that. The software, to Steph's point about, yeah, in a perfect world, you can build a one-page plan utilizing Salesforce, different sheets in the Salesforce, and that is what you can automate to spit out that plan, but eMoney doesn't have that level of automation yet.
Yep.
So we have time for one more question.
You guys questioned out, Michelle?
Oh, Michelle.
Yes.
So Michelle, when are you going to do your survey?
Oh my gosh.
That was a conversation at dinner last
night. I know. Well, right now we're going to talk about one page plans.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm just keeping you in that extreme accountability lane right here.
So with regard to the one page plan, when you do the whole, why is money important to you? And on the screen, it gave the example to time with my family and serve my community. What are some questions you're asking to get to that? Because I feel like I never get to the deep, good stuff.
One of my favorite questions is, how was money talked about as a kid? What's your money story? Like, I don't say, what's your money story? The question is, how was money viewed when you were growing up? What are your earliest memories about money? And from that, then they'll tell you what your next question is going to, like, you just tell me more about that. Can you expand upon that a little bit more? And then it's a matter of, okay, so how do you view money in your life right now? What does money mean to you going forward? Because okay. All of us have a money story, right? We all come from a sense of scarcity or abundance. And that's one of my favorite questions to ask in the beginning. And then as they tell you how money was used, how they viewed money as a kid, what their money story is, that can then lead into, how do you view money in your life now?
Yeah, a couple of questions that you feel really comfortable with that are really well placed in time will typically get you there, because then all you have to do is ask follow-on questions. Can you tell me more about that?
I mean, Bill Bacharach has values-based selling, right? What's important about money to you? I think that's basically the thesis or the cornerstone question to that entire book and process. I asked that question one time when I read the book, and I just had a prospective client laugh. I said, what's so funny? He's like, you're the third advisor that's asked me that question. I can't use that question anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's it, because I've said that to clients, and I said, you know, why is it important to you? What are you hoping to accomplish? And, you know, they'll answer something and I'll say, oh, tell me more about that. And they're like, well, that's it. That's enough. Isn't that good? And I just maybe saying the whole, what is your earliest memory of money as a kid, or however you phrased it.
Well, go ahead.
The easy thing to do is to stop at the chief complaint. Why are they here, right? That's the tactical reason that they're here. But asking them, why is that important? So I put on their intake, you know, what's the biggest financial problem that you're looking to have solved? I want to sell my practice for max valuation. Well, why?
Why is that important to you is the bridge question from the technical or the functional to the other side. Why is that important to you? Hey, I've worked hard for 30 years. I'd really like to not have to start. Hey, my wife's really nagging me about quitting and I want to make sure I have enough money to buy the boat, whatever it is. And then that becomes your gateway, but you still have to use your discernment to know how to meet people where they are. If you ask them a couple of those questions and they don't go deeper, they're not ready to go deeper. You don't have to. If you ask me that question, I'd be like, oh, let's talk about my money. I'm like, yeah, my mom had like, but like not everyone is there. So again, your job isn't to like throw yourself into like, I have to crack you open to add value. They're going to be somewhere in that value chain in terms of their ability to receive the value that you have. And your job is to discern, hey, this is someone that's really open to having this conversation. You can say, hey, we're going to have a lot of conversations about money and they tend to come with feelings. What are the ones that come up the most for you? Someone else that might be way too far too fast.
All right.
So when at United, we built questions in levels, safe questions, because I had advisors who were like, no way am I asking those touchy-feely questions. Why is that important to you is a safe, exploratory curiosity question.